I wonder if you had one shot to fix the world, how would you do it? If you were a queen, the king, a president, how would you fix the world? Would you start by surrounding yourself with the wisest people in the world, the professors at universities? Or would you surround yourself by powerful people? People like billionaires and generals. If you had one chance to fix the world, how would you do it? What we hear about in our readings this morning is a different picture of how God fixes the world. God shows us how he fixes the world through Good Friday. In the eyes of the world, this approach seems silly, this approach seems ghastly, this approach just seems completely foolish. But God's wisdom proves something deeper. It works far deeper to change everything that we know and understand. So why? I wonder, why did Paul call the message of the cross foolish? Maybe it was because Paul lived in a world that was hooked on status. Status is all about our value, the importance people place upon us. Our status depends upon what people think of our family, our tribe, our capacity to live an honourable life. In Paul's day, things like loyalty and duty and patriotism, these were things that were enormously important, things that would cause your status to rise and people think well of you. But if you live poorly, if you hung around with the wrong people, then shame and humiliation would follow. It would be hard to shake. We've all seen that just recently with the Australian men's cricket team. Paul spoke to Christians in the city of Corinth. He spoke to a world where Jews and Gentiles thought honour was important and foolishness was something to avoid. For Greeks, they would find honour in wisdom. Wisdom was about insight. It was about the capacity to grasp reality and then to live out a lifestyle that fitted with that reality. For Jewish people, it was slightly different. For Jewish people, status and honour depended upon your capacity to follow the covenant of Moses in all its detail. No wonder that Paul would declare that the message of the cross was utter foolishness. It was completely foolish because in a world filled with generals, a world filled with men of power, no one in their right mind would let themselves be betrayed by someone like Judas or disowned by someone like Peter. In a world where leaders were meant to be eloquent and wise, no leader worth their salt would stand before the governor and be silent. In a world where leaders were meant to be men of great power and strength, no leader would let themselves be crucified, to be pinned naked on a cross. Only the lowest, only those who were most despised, criminals like traitors and rebels, these people would be crucified because the cross was an instrument of shame. It was an instrument, an execution device designed to prolong someone's death for as long as possible. It's no wonder that Paul sees this shame and acknowledges it. But here's the thing. God is not put off by foolishness. God is not put off by shame, not by any means. God is perfectly okay to watch people who say that they are too cool, too smart, too powerful to be taken in by all this crucifixion malarkey. God is not afraid of people who demand a sign to prove to them that he is real. God is not worried by them at all. But to those who recognize how God is not ashamed of foolishness, to them, the cross is a sign of God's wisdom. The cross is all about God's power. To these, the message of the cross makes perfect sense because God is not afraid to be weak and vulnerable. God is not embarrassed to be thought of as foolish or stupid or to be seen as a complete disgrace. No, this is the wisdom that Paul sees in the prophet Isaiah, because Isaiah spoke of someone who would come, a servant, a leader who would lead and redeem his people. And what would this leader look like? Would this leader be the usual kind, the one who's taller, the one who's stronger, the one who has a brighter smile than any of us? No. It would be someone who is faithful, someone who would be capable of going right to the end. It would be someone who would be untroubled by those who thought of him as scum. It would be someone capable of bearing the pain and the suffering of others. It would be someone who was capable and untroubled by the thought that God would pour out his wrath upon him. Why would this servant act in this way? Would it be by compulsion? Would it be because he had no other choice? Would it be because he wanted power and glory? No. The servant acts out of a simple motive, and that motive is love. It's love that the servant embraces humiliation. It's because of love that the servant suffers violence. It's out of love that he embraces and endures gross injustice. It's because of love that the servant gives up their own life. It's out of love that the servant is more than happy to stand with the outcasts, the black sheep, and the never-do-wells. Paul, that great persecutor of the faith, is the one who sees in Jesus God's true servant. He sees in Jesus God's true wisdom worked out. It's in Jesus that Paul sees how grace transforms everything. Because it's in Jesus that God comes down to die upon the cross so that we might be lifted up into a relationship with him. In Jesus, God climbs down into human life, going as deep and going as far as it is humanly possible. God experiences the worst. He endures the worst so that he could carry everyone. Paul says that God goes to these great lengths for one simple reason, so that we all might be made right, that we may be made holy, that we may be set free. God does this. God embraces this foolishness so that we might be free enough to be a little foolish ourselves. It takes a little bit of foolishness to think you can fix a broken world, doesn't it? It takes a little more foolishness to think that you can use broken people to fix a broken world. It takes another layer of foolishness to think that broken people can fix a broken world using such flimsy things as doing justice, loving mercy, showing humility Why, all of that stuff, that's just the Mount Everest of foolishness. But that's the power of God. That's the wisdom of grace. That's why God went to the cross to invite us so that we might feel a little freer to be foolish. So that we can bring our pride and lay it at the cross and be embraced by humility. That we could bring our anger and our resentment and our harshness and be embraced by mercy. That we could bring all our privilege, all our sense of wanting to be on top and let justice be done. Jesus sets us free so that we no longer have to be hostage to pain and disappointment and futility. No, he brings us to the cross. He sets us free so that we might know love and hope and see this world fixed because of Jesus. On the night he was betrayed, Jesus told his disciples to love one another. And on this Good Friday, on God's Friday, Jesus shows what love is about. He shows them love, not that they would be recipients of redemption. No, that we all might become free enough to be foolish to think that redemption in this world is possible. You see, God wants to fix this world, and he's working at it, and he's asked you, and he's asked me to be a part of this work. That's why the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it is the wisdom of God.